Welcome back to Horoscope Witch. It's Mal, and guys, this episode is so good. I'm so excited for it. Just a few housekeeping announcements before we get into it. I recently changed my Etsy name to Horoscope Witch, so now I am completely pretty much all platforms. I'm under Horoscope Witch, so you can find me more easily. And recently, I did just post a new listing on Etsy for a 2020 year ahead tarot reading. So if you are interested in booking a 2020 reading with me, you can go right along to Etsy. This reading is a pre-recorded video reading. It's really extensive. We'll really get into your year ahead, some advice from Spirit of how to navigate 2020. The only thing is, I got a very strong message from Spirit that I should wait until January to channel these messages. So as long as you're okay with receiving your 2020 reading in January, I would love to work with you. I just recently put them up on Etsy for holiday purposes. So just in case you wanted to purchase this kind of gift for a loved one, or if you wanted to ask for this as one of your gifts. So I figured I should put it up there. And as far as purchasing readings for gift purposes for your friends or your family or whatnot, I'm definitely open to it. I've given readings as gifts before. Just make sure that the person on the receiving end genuinely wants a tarot reading and know that all tarot readings aren't happy, happy, joy, joy. I mean, tarot readings will bring up some challenges and things that you need to work on. So sometimes as a gift, that may not be, sometimes the person may not receive that well. So just kind of think hard if you are really going to purchase any kind of reading from any practitioner as a gift, for the holidays, for a loved one. Really do tune into your own intuitive knowing and really think, is this person going to find this helpful? So yeah, that's what I wanted to say about that. And is there anything else? No, well, let me give you guys this a little bit of a intro. So I had this idea a couple months ago that I should make a new series on Horoscope Witch, something about exploring the natal chart, but through the lens of storytelling. And I really wanted to sort of manifest interesting guests that I can interview on the podcast about their life story, but also doing it through the lens of the birth chart. And luckily, when I met Rosha, I knew they were definitely going to have to be on this series with me, and I'm so glad they agreed to be the first one to start off this series with me. So you'll hear the interview with Rosha. So Rosha is a non-binary witch, a composer, musician, singer, songwriter, psychic intuitive, and we'll hear a lot about their journey as an intuitive. There are parts of this episode where Rosha shares what it's like to be a synesthete or someone who has synesthesia. You guys will definitely hear more about that. Rosha also shares their really interesting journey with the scrying mirror, which is a mode of divination that I wasn't completely really aware of until I met Rosha and until they actually, read for me through a scrying mirror. So you'll definitely hear more about that mode of divination as well. And on a deeper note, we talked a lot about Rosha's grieving process. We also talked about Rosha's struggle with addiction. So there's some things in here too, little bits and pieces that I think other people will really resonate with. And also this one's for the students of astrology too. So if you are a student of astrology and you're interested in sort of following along on a more astrological level, I have posted Rosha's chart on my Instagram. So of course, if you're not a student of astrology and you're just here to listen, I think you'll be equally entertained as a person who's actually studying astrology, but I just thought I'd put that out there if you want to sort of follow along with what I'm saying about their chart. Go to Instagram, check out the natal chart that I posted, and thank you guys so much for listening. One more thing, there are parts of this audio. We were trying out new microphones, and you guys know me with the technology, and I really don't edit this podcast that much, and I do most of the recording just through the speaker of my own phone. So we were trying out some new microphones, and they're they're pretty good most of the time, but there are some times in this podcast where I am a little bit louder than Rosha's voice, so I hope you guys don't mind. Maybe some of the Virgos out there will, but I think everybody else will be okay. And please, guys, please excuse my cackle. There's just some times where I'm like, oh God, Mal, your cackle. Can you stop? Can you take it down a notch? So, but let me know what you think about this episode. If you do enjoy, go on iTunes, hit us up with those 5-star ratings. I really appreciate it. Share this episode with a friend and enjoy this new series on Horoscope Witch. Okay, so actually I wanted to start your chart reading off with the fact that when I was in New York, I was in the Met and I saw a statue of, I think it's like this Greek or Roman god, his name's Orpheus. Have you ever heard of Orpheus?
Yep. We call it, yeah, Orphea.
Is that how you
it
pronounce
is Orpheus,
it?
But yeah, there's a few operas that are Orphea or Orpheus. Yeah, of course, you know, I sing at the Met. So.
Well, yeah, no, and it's, so I saw that and I figured that you'd know who this is, but it is sort of a god, and he plays the lyre, or the lyre.
Yeah.
The lyre, so it's like the little harp, and he plays the harp, and he tames the demons or the beasts with the sound of the lyre.
Yes.
And I don't know if you know that when I do birth chart readings, I usually sometimes will feel called to title the chart. So that is what I titled your chart. I titled it Orpheus Tames Their Beasts with the Lyre.
Nice.
And that was literally the first thing I thought when I saw this statue. I was like, that's Rosha's chart.
Yes.
Like, that is what is in this chart. There's so many things about using your creativity to your advantage, using your creativity to heal really deep wounds, and actually using things like music and art to do shadow work.
Yes.
And that's a big part of your practice too.
Yes.
As a magic practitioner, I don't know exactly what word you use to describe yourself.
I go by witch.
You go by witch? Okay.
Or ceremonial magician.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or ritual practitioner, yeah. You know, there's so many names we can go by, you know.
Yeah, exactly. So the aspect in your chart that I wanted to bring up before we talk about your, you know, the top three, we'll talk about your sun and your moon in Taurus, we'll talk about your Cancer rising. But before that, I thought it'd be a good place to start. I wanted to start with your Mercury opposition Neptune.
Okay.
So you actually have this Mercury in your 11th house, and he's opposing your Neptune in the 5th. And I actually think this is where your clairvoyance comes from. And I was wondering if you could kind of tell us a little bit more about your journey with the scrying mirror, and what is a scrying
yes.
mirror? Because that aspect is like scrying mirror to me, like
well I mean So
yeah, what is a scrying mirror?
So a well, there's several things you can use as a scrying mirror. You can just use a black mirror, or you can use a bowl of water, or you can use obsidian. My preferred way to scry is to use an obsidian mirror. And then also pour water on top of the obsidian mirror to kind of strengthen my visions with the angels I'm connecting with.
So
I should specify the Enochian angels I speak with.
Yes, because the Enochian angels are what you consider to be your guides or your spirit guides or part of your team on the other side.
Yeah, it's definitely not the Kabbalistic angels, the 72. I knew that. I mean, I had readers tell me from like being a teenager that I was a star seed, and I always felt like a bit of an alien being, and I've never felt like, you know, I mean, and I'm also non-binary. I never felt like I was male or female, or that I even fit in the equation. So for me, I very much felt like the normal human experience was just not going to be something for me. And so when I started doing research into Enochian magic and scrying, that was something where I was like, where those angels are just not of this earth whatsoever. And they won't just come when they're called.
You have
to prove that you're worth their assistance and you're worth their messages.
Yeah, that's so interesting. Because most people who are listening to this, if they have a divination tool, it's probably the tarot. Mm-hmm. But your first divination tool was then the scrying mirror.
It was scrying, yeah.
How did you discover this, or like who taught you, or I guess like what age were you when you even like came across this kind of thing? I don't know.
I was 16.
Okay.
This
is before you went to England.
No, this is when I was in England.
Oh, you were in England.
Yeah.
Okay.
So our tradition is we don't give our predecessors names, but he is long passed on.
Okay.
So my predecessor was actually a druid, a practicing druid.
Oh.
And he himself did not use scrying as a method for Enochian magic. He used scrying as a way to connect with his ancestors, and more of the Celtic gods aspects that he very much relied on and felt most comfortable to connect to. But he also owned this occult library in Glastonbury. So it was one of those situations where I just went in a lot, and he kind of like took me under his wing and kind of knew that something was on with me.
Right.
And I kind of had the feeling too, it was very synchronous. And so I was a synesthete.
Yeah, tell.
Always. And
yeah.
So that connected to also like my environment around me always felt like I saw things that other people didn't see. And I think he thought that was an interesting aspect of me too, and kind of wanted to see what my perspective was in scrying. So, you were going to ask. So synesthesia, I have what's specifically called chromesthesia.
Mm.
And that is, it's basically a neurological dysfunction synesthesia is usually when you have two or more senses, physical senses that react to a single stimulus. So like chromesthesia, which is what I have, is basically any sounds that I hear, I see colors,
yeah,
or a myriad of colors, and sometimes they're moving watercolors, and sometimes it's like white fuzz, sometimes it's like interwoven patterns of color together. Sometimes they move, sometimes they don't move. So it really matters what the sound is and how then my brain translates that through my vision.
That's so fascinating. And the reason I'm kind of likening your clairvoyance, your use of the scrying mirror, and the synesthesia, I think, could be seen in that Mercury opposition Neptune, because Mercury's our planet of our mind, the way our minds work. It's how we communicate.
Yeah.
And your Mercury is always communicating with Neptune, which is our spirituality, our higher consciousness. Now, there's a much lower form of Neptune, too, that's about the way we maybe, the planet of, you know, doing harm against ourselves, or doing things that aren't good for us. Like, our addictions can also be within Neptune. But I feel like the highest octave of your Mercury opposition Neptune is that sort of that talent you have with the colors, mm-hmm. and also with communicating with the angels. Now, you also have another aspect that I would say this is where you truly are always in communication with the other side. And you also have Neptune trining your Jupiter, and Jupiter's sort of that I call Jupiter the priest of our birth chart.
Yeah.
So you have that spirituality, Neptune, making this beautiful aspect to Jupiter. So it really indicates someone who came to this planet not only to use their intuition, not only to channel and divinate from the angels, but also to teach it to others.
Yeah.
Which I know you've been kind of maybe toying with stepping into lately, and you have stepped into it.
I mean, I've done it before. I mean, it was years ago, and as you know, I had several periods of my life where I had various things as my priority, my main priority. But I even got an honorary doctorate in metaphysics with some of the work I was doing, and I was talking about I would do a lot of talks about my synesthesia and then my spiritual communication using synesthesia and scrying in particular, particularly with Enochian magic, but also ritual magic and like proceedings of the orders of the Order of Golden Dawn,
right?
Which I'm also a part of, and so it was kind of unusual for me to kind of decide to take a step back from that in order to pursue the career that I'm now still doing, which is composing.
Right.
And but now it's, you know, it spirit tells you when it's time to come back to the fold.
Yes.
And so that happened about 2 years ago for me. And so I've definitely been feeling the itch to heal and to teach and to share my experiences, because I know they're very unusual experiences.
Right, such unusual experiences. There's so much to talk about with your chart. You have so many interesting things that, again, they link a lot back to just an extremely spiritual soul that did choose to come to Earth to teach and awaken others. But I'm also seeing that in your chart a struggle with, I think, someone who's so highly sensitive and so connected with spirit that sometimes, like, the actual human experience is very difficult. Day-to-day things, like, and I think everybody who is intuitive will kind of understand this on some level, like, the actually, you know, being in the body, having relationships with others, navigating conflicts, that's the stuff that's like, oh, this is the petty human stuff. Like, I want the higher experience.
Yeah, I want no part of that.
You know, you want no part in being human. You have an aspect. We'll talk about your 12th house stuff in a second. But one of the aspects that you have, you actually have Saturn in your 12th. And he is squaring Jupiter. or in the 10th. So while you have these amazing aspects to Jupiter, Jupiter is also kind of being a little bit reined in by Saturn in the 12th. Now, in human speak, what does a Saturn square Jupiter in the chart mean for a person? I mean, it depends how you experience it. Some people with this aspect can go through a very back and forth oscillation between periods of their life where they're extremely optimistic and extremely like the world's gonna end, yeah, and I have no purpose, yeah. And I feel so depressed, and I feel like I just can't keep going. Versus then there's a swing back to that more Jupiter side where everything's great, everything's spiritual. Mm-hmm. I'm with God. I'm with my angels. But the thing about this in your chart is that Saturn's in the 12th. So you're not necessarily going to let people know, you know, when these pessimistic times are happening.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, you like to appear outwardly, yes. I would say optimistic. And I actually really do view you as a very Jupiter-influenced person, because you do come off as someone who's very optimistic.
And that always shocks me when people tell me that, because I feel like I'm not an optimistic person. And when people tell me, like, the especially the last several years, I get people that say, you are so full of light, or you are like one of the most like optimistic, positive people that I've met. And I'm like, what's wrong with you?
Well, that's your Saturn in the 12th.
It definitely throws me by surprise.
Yeah, because I think your Saturn in the 12th, I think it will often influence you to think in a very in that pessimistic manner. And it's not to say that we should ignore the tough things that we're going through, but I think what that Saturn in the 12th really does for you, I think that makes you a little bit scared of the future, what the future holds, to a point where it could make you feel paranoid about, you know, committing to things, or even thinking about the future sometimes seems so overwhelming to you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Give me a little bit more about, like, have you ever gone through a period of your life where you were just so avoidant about thinking about the future? Or is that like your whole life?
I don't know. I think it's more, I'm always hopeful for the future, but mm-hmm. I never know what's going to happen. And I think especially now in this stage of my life where it's like, and of course, like, it's, there's no proof that that's what happens. It's not, life's not formulaic for any of us. But I think especially with the passing of my parents now and my not having an attachment to many people, especially my biological family, that makes me, it always gives me the sense of, you know, well, then how long do I have? And so I try to avoid it, because yes, I don't like to hear or find out that something bad might happen, which I also know there's that's my shadow side. And but I think my higher self tells me all the time that I'm meant for greater things, and that nothing, like, for the curtain definitely is not drawing anytime soon for me.
Right.
And so I think it's that struggle I have with my higher self and my shadow side about, like, the future.
That's definitely,
like, the points of anxiety.
That's definitely a Jupiter square Saturn problem.
Yeah.
It's like, the future seems so overwhelming, and honestly, the future's kind of like a boner killer for you, because it's like, it's like, there's nothing worse than thinking about, like, I don't know, like, it takes away the joy of the present moment for you to think about the future a lot.
I think my focus is much more on the future than it is in the present, even now. Even now that I've made a conscious choice to try to live as much in the present and focus on the present, I still have a subconscious obsession with the, what's the next thing I need to do? What do I have to do? What do I want to do next?
Right.
What's the next accomplishment that I want to make?
Right.
Yeah.
That, yep. Yeah, Saturn's a big part of everybody's chart, but especially with your placement in the 12th house, it also shows that Saturn for you, that taskmaster, that kind of father time being like, okay, Rosha, the time's ticking. Mm-hmm. That's like a part of you that seems to just be nagging at you. No matter how hard you try to repress that, it'll always come out.
Mm-hmm.
And I think because it's in the 12th, it's also hashtag a past life issue. You've done this pattern before, and I think in past lives, you have avoided making future plans in favor for maybe like the fun and joy of the present moment. But then, I actually am kind of getting a download. I think in a past life, you may have quote-unquote like lost a lot, whether it's finances or friends or just joy in life, from avoiding the future, actually.
Mm-hmm.
It's sort of like in the avoidance of the future and just like kind of being that, I want to say that like Great Gatsby, like, you know, having the party or not that you're necessarily a partier, but like having, like chasing the joy of the present moment, that like future is, that future just seems daunting. But you're here to overcome that somehow in this life. And I think it's through your connection with spirit. And you actually, like you said, you do have, because time doesn't exist in spirit, you understand the future maybe in a different way than most people would.
Mm-hmm.
But it's kind of about you now connecting that for yourself. Can I ask, has there ever been a time in your life where you lost your faith in spirit, or you cut out spirit from your life?
Yes.
See, that's incredible, because, I mean, yeah, that probably was part of your soul contract to go through something like that. Because, you know, again, you have so many strong aspects that say you are intuitive, yet that Saturn in the 12th, that Saturn squaring Jupiter, is going to sometimes have you faced with challenges that make you maybe lose your faith.
Oh, absolutely.
Did you lose your faith after you lost your parents?
It was a combination of things, but it happened within the same year.
Yeah.
My marriage, which is no longer existent, my marriage kind of, I felt, forced me, I'm not blaming him, but putting myself in a marriage with this particular person, I think, forced me to give up on my spiritual practice. And then right after getting married, a few months later, my mother passed, and that was a very sudden thing. And my mother was my world. She was my best friend. She was my confidant. She was always, always, always the first person I called.
Yeah.
For good news and bad news and anything. And that was heavily traumatic for me.
Right.
Heavily.
Totally.
Yeah.
You have the sun conjuncting your moon, and sometimes the moon can be mom in the birth chart. And when you have your sun conjunct moon, I mean, it means a lot of things for a lot of different people. But in this case, in your sense of your life, it's literally mom, the moon, is very close to who you are, the sun.
Yeah, because I even tell people now that she's around all the time. I will get messages from her all the time. She communicated with me pretty immediately after she passed. Like, the day after she passed, I was feeling communications from her. And that is very representative of my mother.
Do you remember when
she was like always like stalking. She just wanted to... She was like the mom from the Goldbergs, the TV show The Goldbergs. She just wanted to love... She wanted to love my brother and I so much that like, it was hard for her to let go sometimes.
Yeah, no. And I remember when that one night we were out at that Mexican restaurant, mm-hmm. and your mom kind of came to me randomly. Like, you were talking about her,
yeah.
and then I was kind of feeling her presence, and she felt like, I mean, I can't really explain it. Other than she felt like a Pisces. And I asked you, when was your mom's birthday? And you said February 28th, which is my birthday.
Yeah.
So I was like, oh my God, that's so funny that I felt her presence kind of in the same way, like just a very gentle soul that I think was, yeah, I think easily taken over by other people who wanted to have like a grasp around her.
Oh my God, all the time.
Yeah.
And those people always made her feel stupid and value and just completely valueless. And that always made me really sad.
Yeah.
Because she bought into it. But she, honestly, she was, if there was anyone who I knew unconditional love from, it was her.
It was her.
And it was almost everyone I knew. Anyone I knew that knew her would say the same thing. Like, everyone would be shocked. The first time she would meet people,
yeah,
she'd hug them immediately. Mm. And everyone just felt like that welcoming presence from her.
Yeah.
And that's always what I've aspired to, is to be that same person.
You know how to give a hug. I think a lot of people, yes. A lot of people don't know
they how. Call me magic hugs.
Yes, a lot of people really don't know how to give a hug. I think it's because a lot of people's inner child won't let them give a true hug.
Yeah.
But your inner child knows how to give a hug, I think.
I think my inner child and I are very connected. We don't always see eye to eye on things. Mm-hmm. That's something that I think we all struggle with. But I think my inner child and I don't think I ever let go of my inner child. I think that was a thing. I've never gone through any part of my life where I didn't have that creative, imaginative kid that I grew up as.
Yeah.
I'm still that kid, except I'm just much bigger.
That's the Neptune in the fifth house. Because the fifth house is where... The fifth house is our, and your north node in the fifth house.
Yeah.
You know, that's our place in our chart of our personal creative projects.
Gotcha.
The fact that you have north node, which is literally why your soul chose to come here, and then again, that Neptune, that spirituality, you have that in the fifth house, which is really, it's sort of, I hope this doesn't sound cryptic, but I just heard the phrase like, you either create or you die. Like, it's almost...
Oh, yeah.
It's like
no,
that
that's
intense.
That's not cryptic at all.
Yeah.
That's... I don't feel like I can exist without creating.
Yeah, yeah.
That I know is my true purpose. And I've known that was the purpose since I was, like, 8 years old. I never had a doubt. And I've had so many people say, why? Like, how did you know so young? I'm like, you know what? I just did, and I've never questioned it.
Yeah.
I've never questioned it. I know, but I also don't compare anyone else's journey to mine. I just know that my journey was mine, and that's just how it is, and I embraced it. And I like everything I do, my grief, my turmoil, my spirituality, everything I put in the works that I create now.
See, that's at Orpheus.
Yeah.
Orpheus taming the beast.
Yeah.
That's that Neptune in the fifth house. But you, I think there's another place in your chart that could indicate that synesthesia, too. Going back to your 12th house placements, we talked a little bit about your Saturn, but you also have your Venus in the 12th house. So you have these two really important planets in that place in your chart that is the subconscious. It's where we keep our secrets a lot of the times.
Yeah.
Actually, I think Venus in the 12th is your love of solitude, and I think your Saturn in the 12th house is your fear of loneliness.
Oh my God, like 100%. 100%.
It's weird to have those two feelings at once, but I understand it because I have it too.
I think I'm so used to it now, that seems normal to me.
Yeah.
I mean, yes. Like, especially when it comes to creating, I need to be by myself. I need to, like, re-energize, and I cannot re-energize with people around me, and I need to, like, go away, which is why I go to Michigan now all the time and paint there because I don't want to do that in the city. But, yeah, it's definitely a huge... That's a lingering feeling that I've had for a very long time.
It's like, yeah, how to balance that really deep need to be alone and be in solitude, mm-hmm. but also that actually your deep need to be loved or feel love. And I think that's what you're working through right now in your soul's journey. I want to say that you're going to be working through this Venus squaring Pluto. Now, this is one of the guys in your chart that is your challenge. Mm-hmm. And I think parts of your life, you have already ran into this challenge of Venus square Pluto. Of course, it's unconscious, but also it doesn't matter. You can go through your whole life never having a natal chart reading and still live out your chart, you know?
Yeah.
But just the value of doing the natal chart is to kind of bring an awareness of your behavior, I guess. But the Venus in the 12th, I said it's your love of solitude, it's synesthesia. This could be, you know, indulging. It's sort of this, where can I get love and pleasure in sort of a low risk situation. It's like,
yes.
Because Venus square Pluto makes us feel like intimacy and love from humans mm-hmm. is a very high risk thing. Because we ourselves are very intense in love. We are very attached. We are possessive at times. And that feels so scary. It's like when Michael Scott says, I want people to fear how much they love me.
Yeah.
Like sometimes you fear how much you can love someone. And notice how I think there have been certain times in your life where other things you can feel love for and feel pleasure from that are much more low risk than a personal relationship.
Yeah.
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 Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think especially the last few years, for me, I've been able to form different kinds of friendships of completely non-romantic natures that I feel like have been very fulfilling.
Right.
And, you know, sometimes those relationships, you know, change and those people go away. But, like, I feel like I've been able to depend much more on friends as a way of still having emotional intimacy, but without romantic entanglements, because I don't need that. I don't feel like, I don't get that feeling with friends, you know. Usually in those groups, like, I find... Like, you're either going to be my friend or you're not going to be my friend.
Yeah.
And I've been very much more open to forming closer ties with people that I think make people think. I raise an eyebrow when I'm like, no, really, nothing's going on here. We're just like...
Oh, right.
We just like each other a lot. And like, we're like, we can be affectionate, but it's not a romantic nature, you know? So, yeah, I've been much more having that kind of...
More of the intimate friendship.
To more intimate friendships instead, yeah.
In the times of your life where you have been in romantic relationships, it doesn't necessarily have to be your marriage, but it certainly could.
Yeah.
Do you feel like you attract possessive people who want to possess you? Or have there been times, or maybe possessive is the wrong word. We could use the word controlling, or even just like who want to manage you or like micromanage you in some way.
Yeah, I think the trend has been
tell me the trend.
I think the trend has been guys who say they really appreciate, like, or love me for who I am, but then have at the same time plans of how to change me.
Mm.
And then becomes a bit controlling, not so much through like dominance, but through like manipulation.
Yeah.
And
see,
then, and then turned against me.
Right.
Yeah.
I think that can be the dark side of that Venus square Pluto, because any square to Pluto, especially a planet like Venus, which is about what we love, our love for ourselves, when we're in square to a Pluto, Pluto can be kind of very dominating, very controlling, very possessive, and maybe want to steer us somewhere where we don't necessarily feel is like safe for us.
Mm-hmm.
But yet when we have that square to Pluto, there's like this unconscious attraction to what does not make us feel safe.
Yeah.
And we have to be careful about that, and to really become aware of like how we're operating from, like, where do I feel safe? Where do I feel not safe? And am I attracting unconsciously these partners that don't make me feel safe and accepted?
Right.
The thing I was thinking with, because your Venus is in the 12th house, so quite literally, what you love can be kept secret at times. And I wouldn't be surprised if some of your relationships, maybe that was when you kept your love of metaphysics secret, or you kind of kept it on the down low, or even stopped communicating with spirit.
Oh, that's definitely a possibility.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think I was ever in a relationship where, I was in one relationship, and I can't mention that one because that was the actor.
Okay, we won't mention
but,
that.
But, you know what I'm talking about.
Yes.
but that one was very, like, accepting. There was a whole different nature of why it, things kind of like did not work, but everything else, I pretty much, the other person had was very weirded out, and they would try to say that they're very understanding, but never would. I get a lot of Bewitched references.
Oh,
and I'm like, that just show me that you don't get it still, or that you're not even trying to understand it. So, yeah, I think. Other than that one relationship, that's pretty much been the norm.
Which
is then pretty much why it falls apart, because I know I can't live in a life like that.
Would you perceive yourself as the giver in relationships? Like, you feel like you're always the one who's giving more to the person than they're giving to you, acceptance-wise, maybe?
I would say, in relationships in general, any relationships I have, yes.
Okay.
In romantic relationships, it's pretty much mattered with, like, dependent on who the person was. I've definitely been in relationships where that person gave me a lot, more than I was willing to give them. But then it's been the exact opposite with others, too.
Mm.
But in my daily life, I tend to want to give as much as possible to acquaintances and friends, like the people I see on a regular basis.
Yeah.
I think that's just something that I think I got from my mom.
Yeah, the Pisces.
Yeah.
The kind of like, I think with the, again, with that Venus square Pluto, we have to be careful about a fear of receptivity to the point where we may be attracting, especially in romantic relationships, the relationship where the person won't give us anything that we need, but it's because we're afraid of receiving what we need. And that could definitely have been something that came up for you in an earlier part of your life too, because obviously your chart has grown, and we grow into our chart, and we learn the lessons of our chart, and we walk into the lessons of our chart. And we can't predict really how they'll show up. The one thing I'm coming up with too, with the, and we mentioned this kind of before we went into this, like the secrets, and I like kind of feeling, and I asked you, is there anything that we can't talk about? And you said, no, like, no. I'm kind of done with my secrets. And I think that's that Venus in the 12th, that feeling of I have to either keep who I am closeted, keep what I love closeted, or keep my deepest interests closeted, because, you know, it seems such a tender thing. It's like the things that you love, they're so close to who you are that if someone were to know and reject that, mm-hmm. it would be like, oh, like that stab in the heart.
I've had people literally damn me for being as open as I am.
Yeah.
I think, and you know, you and I have talked about this, but I mean, I've even talked about this, like when I'm doing residencies at universities or whatever, that like, and I do like a big talk about, like, I share a lot of myself on social media, and it's creative, but it's also personal. It's my professional life and my personal life together, and I don't have any qualms with keeping those separate.
Yeah,
I feel like if we don't show our basest selves, then how are we going to grow as people, and how are we going to try to live by example for other people as well? So and that's the thing. I was like, I'll say, like, hey, listen, audience, like, you can all breathe your collective sigh of relief, because there's nothing that's going to feel awkward in this,
right? Episode,
because I'm an open book, and I mean, anything that's happened to me, I'm sure has happened to someone else, and I don't feel shame or guilt about anything that's gone on in my life. So. But, you know, who knows? There might be something subconsciously that I might still have under a rock that I'm not open to or awakened to yet.
Well, I think the good thing is you have what we call the redirect, right? If we have like a more challenging aspect, like that Venus square Pluto, the astrologer will look for the redirect, where it is that energy really balance out. And I think, you know, you also have that Venus trining Uranus, and Uranus is that kind of that rebellious kind of part of us that wants to be different, that unique part of us that's sort of revolutionary, mm-hmm. and it's sort of like you can kind of let these secrets, or you've let these secrets out of you know, out of the cage, I want to say, like, throughout life, but it's sort of like the things that you have let out have been shocking to others. And also, I want to say you've been sort of a little bit of a, almost like you're clearing, the spirit is giving me the image of you like clearing the path for others.
Yeah.
And actually, I've never asked you about this. When you realized, or when you started to want to sort of identify as non-binary, mm-hmm. did you see a lot of people like who are a little bit younger than you being able to claim that and feeling like nobody my age is doing this? Or is that me just being ageist?
No. No, I don't believe so at all. There's definitely a truth to that. It was me coming to the realization and into the knowledge of knowing that label existed. I do think it was from people who were younger than me, who were putting that, who were identifying as that. And then I remember it came like a big like flood wave of like flashbacks.
Oh,
like, of course, because this and this and this and this and this, and even when I identified as a gay man, I never felt like that was right.
Mm.
I never felt like I was a gay man.
Yeah,
and I never thought I was a man. Mm. I never thought I was a woman. I never felt like I was either. I don't feel like I'm both. I feel like I'm neither. Or a combination of them. I don't feel like I'm that at all. And so having the realization, discovering what the whole identity of what a non-binary person is, was like That hit so hard. But yes, it was from a younger generation person where I did gain that. I'm like, oh yeah, that's like, and it wasn't even me like needing to process that. It was
right.
Like, holy crap.
It was almost like a download. It was like a download from spirit. Like mm-hmm. almost you were like, that is me. Like that's finally what I've been looking for. Mm-hmm. That's what feels right.
Yeah. I've come out of the closet many times for many things.
Right.
That was really the final frontier for me. And it really was, I felt like I was 100% the person I was meant to be at that moment when I finally said publicly, announced publicly that's how I identified.
Yeah. Once you shared with me, a story that made a lot of sense, like looking at your birth chart, you were sharing with me some advice on how to deal with like my parents and kind of their disapproval. Mm-hmm. And you had this like Venus trining Uranus moment in your life where you kind of had this very much like on stage moment where you mind?
That was literally.
Yeah. Like, do you mind sharing that? If you,
because no,
I love that story.
Because a lot of people saw that moment. I don't know if they'll remember it because that was a long time ago. Yeah. I mean, I literally came out of the closet. I was doing a concert. I was doing my album Lovers and Other Kinds of Monsters came out, and it was for me a very it felt like a very brave album for me because I was coming out full force, and I was talking about a man who I was. The whole album was about this one man that I just completely like was gaga over and really connected with, and it felt like there was no turning back. Like I couldn't turn back.
Yeah.
And this was the choice to make. And I think it was because of repressed feelings that I had from being a kid and being, you know, thrown some of the dogma that my parents had thrown at me about homosexuality. And don't get me wrong, I want to make it very clear that when I came out, my mother especially, she was like, I don't believe that anymore.
Like, oh, yeah. Like, that's like, the Pisces.
It changed a lot of things for her. And my dad took a while longer. But so anyway, I did this concert. And I literally were singing these songs and using he, him pronouns about that person. And literally talking about gay things in these songs. And I had a lot of people looking at my parents, and I think in a way it was very unfair of me to do that to them. But at that point, I didn't have a way to do it except out of anger.
Yeah.
And I can't say I regret it. I don't regret it.
Mm-hmm.
I do feel bad that I did it that way, but I don't think there was another way to do it at that point. And it was an hour and ever moment. For me, it was spirit saying, this is time. It's you need to fess up now.
Right.
You need to come to truth now.
Right.
And so unfortunately that's just the way that it happened.
That I love that story. Well, I would say actually in 2018 was that specifically the year where you started to feel like the identity of the gay man that needed to go. Like yes. That was 2018 for you, or like kind of like
yeah.
Because
that feeling was always there, but 2018 is when I was like, oh no, I'm a non-binary person.
That was like the breakthrough.
Yeah.
That is because if I were to like give that an astrological significance, actually transiting Uranus was at the very last degrees of Aries in 2018, and he was setting off your natal Uranus, which is then trining Venus. So it was sort of this, and Uranus, when he sets things off in our chart, it's like, I have to break free. I have to break free. I put that in. I put that in your notes. Freedom at all costs. It's sort of this time where it's like, I literally have no other choice. It has to kind of come out, literally. Yeah. So I wonder if when you sang that on stage in front of your parents, I wonder if a similar aspect was going on, but that was definitely, in 2018, that's really what was setting this up, I think, for you. And also in 2018 to 2019, you had your transiting Pluto was also trining your sun. So literally regeneration of who you are. Mm-hmm. Of your identity.
Yeah.
So it's interesting to see like how you've grown throughout the years. And that's the thing I think people miss about astrology. Yes, you're your natal chart, but it's the transiting planets that set things off in order to make you grow into who you are.
Yeah.
So if like that Uranus aspect you were having in 2018, if that never came about, that sort of secret in the 12th house, Venus, would have just sat there.
Yeah.
So it's like all these things are like setting you off now. So that's really cool. I like that. I wanted to, how much time we got? How are we doing? Oh, we're doing fine on time. We're great on time. I was like, oh my God, have we been talking for 2 hours? No, we're okay. I wanted to talk about your Chiron actually a little bit.
Okay.
Do you know who Chiron is in the chart?
No.
Chirons are the wounded healer. So Chiron's actually an asteroid. He sits between Uranus and Saturn. And why do we care about him in astrology? It's about his archetype. His archetype is literally the wounded healer. So his whole mythology is about how he has these wounds, and the only thing that makes him feel better is healing others with
yes.
those wounds. And where Chiron sits in our chart can indicate a lot about like how we are, quote unquote, wounded as a person. But I will say one time I heard someone say that Chiron is the wound that will never be healed, and I hated that. I think Chiron is just as much of a gift as it is a wound, and I think we naturally heal our Chiron over time as we kind of grow up and we learn these lessons. But your Chiron, which is interesting, is in Aries in the 10th house. So Aries is who am I, and the 10th house is our place in the world. So literally your Chiron is saying, what is my place in this world?
Yeah.
Which I think is really reflective of all of the, I guess, transformations of identity mm-hmm. you've gone through. And I also think that because you have this I am wound, quote unquote, because
yeah.
of that Chiron in Aries, and it's in the 10th house, I think you're always going to be evolving your identity in an interesting way. The one thing I wanted to tell you, which kind of came through from spirit when I was looking at your chart, your Chiron is opposing Uranus. And Uranus, although he can be this get out of jail, like he wants to break free, he wants to revolutionize, they can also be the planet that represents sort of the collective unconscious. The fact that you have Chiron opposing Uranus, it could mean that you have such a deep, almost, your connection to the collective unconscious is so deep and so strong, you have to be careful not to let it destroy you.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe this goes with, we've been talking in the spiritual world about this witch wound.
Yeah.
And maybe I'll relate it to your witch wound. This could be you being so afraid at times to claim that identity of a witch because you're so in touch with the collective unconscious about the fear of witchcraft, the fear of someone claiming the identity of a witch, yet that may not actually be the reality of what would happen if
right.
you were to, which you do. I mean, I think you're pretty out of the closet with the witch identity.
I am, but there's always, I do work in an industry where it's not exactly, like, fully embraced, you know? And
yeah.
so sometimes I have to learn when to let my various identities come forward or not.
Yes, yeah. And I think it's also, like, the not to confuse someone else's wound for your own. Mm-hmm. And we do that all the time, right? I mean, we think about the concept of like internalized homophobia. It's not even ours. It's the wound of the collective, but it becomes ours. Yeah. Or internalized hatred of women, or whatever it may be. You have to be extra careful about that. I think it's not necessarily I'm giving you a warning or anything like that, but I think there's something about you that's so deeply connected to how the collective thinks, it could get mixed up with how you truly feel about yourself, which is this like ever-changing butterfly, you know?
Well, that's kind of funny you mentioned it, because that's something I've been thinking about for a while now, and I have decided to compose a witch's oratorio.
Ooh.
So that I can come forward with that aspect, not to just come forward as a witch, but like to just to be able to bring the idea forward of like there are still witches out there. There are a lot of us.
There are a lot of us out here.
And no, we're not gonna be silenced anymore either. But also paralleling that with, I feel I don't know how to word it. I guess I'll say the feminist dilemma right now.
Yeah.
The you know, especially with these political currents going on, where women are still seen many times as second or third grade citizens, and how that is. That's changing.
Yeah.
There's definitely a war going on with that. And I wanted to reflect that as well, and give it a nice little parallel. So it'll be some work, but it's something I'm ready to do, and just kick open that witch closet.
I think your birth chart would like it if you just basically never stopped changing your identity. And maybe that sounds kind of exhausting to some people, but for you, no, in a weird way, it's like that's what keeps you like.
Well, I think change is really important as for being a creative.
Yeah,
I mean, we go through phases our entire lives, and so that's not a strange thing to me whatsoever. That's actually something that's actually I feel like I've been very aware of for a while now, like. This might not be like how I identify now might not be what I end up a couple years from now, or at least by the end of my life. Who knows?
Yeah.
So no, you have to wear different hats.
That's what it is. Totally. The one thing that I've noticed actually is in my journey with astrology, which has been very short so far, but in the charts that I've gotten to read, I've noticed that sometimes people with specifically Neptune, depending on where it's placed, your Neptune's in the fifth, we've talked about this, a lower octave of this kind of expression is through addiction. Mm-hmm. Actually, people with Neptune in the fifth house, they may be like, I don't wanna say predisposed, but maybe they may be drawn to like some kind of substance abuse or anything addictive of the like, because it's sort of like, fifth house is that area of pleasure, and Neptune is that kind of, that kind of self that wants to escape. There's a part of Neptune that really wants to escape.
Yeah.
And I was wondering if there's like anything that you can share. I don't think you necessarily have like, speaking of identities, I don't know if you identify as addict in any way in this lifetime, but is there anything with that specific archetype that you've kind of, I don't know, been growing or struggling or learning about or anything of that sort?
Yes.
And yes, I'm prompting you right now.
Yes, you are, because you know, but no, yeah, food's a major issue.
Yeah.
Food always was a major issue, and it continues to be an issue, and Again, that's not a secret either. It's something I've been very forward with people, because there are things in my life that I have to absolutely be very honest about, unless I want it to take over and it gets chaotic, you know? So, I mean, eating disorders are not fun. They're not fun.
You know what? It's interesting. And again, like, I don't want people listening to this with Moon and Taurus to, like, I don't know, like, freak out or anything, or like think I'm diagnosing them or anything like that, because I'm not doing that. But I will say, to this day, I've never met a Moon in Taurus who has not struggled with something to do with food.
Yeah.
And you do have your Moon in Taurus conjunct your Sun in Taurus. And really, why does a Moon in Taurus struggle with their relationship with food? It's sort of like, how do I deal with my emotions? Well, I deal with it in the Taurian way, which is to go to the indulgence, to overindulge, or to just seek, again, that low risk, those low risk pleasure things, where, you know, to eat something that tastes good, it does not require you to necessarily be vulnerable with the person, you know, because it's a thing, it's not a person.
And food will tell you yes, and food will love you no matter what.
Food will love you no matter
food
what.
Food will never say no.
Yeah. I think that with your upcoming aspects in 2020, you have transiting Pluto is going to trine you know, your Moon in Taurus. And I think that's going to be happening all year 2020. Basically, I think 2020 is going to be a turning point for you if you choose. Because again, with a trine,
no, I choose, and I feel I've been feeling it for a while too.
Yeah, and it's actually, it's funny that you just mentioned this intuitive eating, because
well, we mentioned intuitive eating before we started.
Yes,
recording.
You. Oh yeah, we mentioned intuitive eating, because I think in your specific personal case, this transiting Pluto trining your natal Moon in Taurus, it's sort of like, how can I regenerate and restructure how I've been coping with my emotions?
Yes.
And also, I think this Pluto trining the Moon is actually going to encourage you to go towards a new coping mechanism, because you can't let go of the old coping mechanism if you don't have a new coping mechanism.
Right.
And that's kind of what the universe is prompting you to find. Now, what do I think that new thing is going to be? I think it's going to be a lot healthier, and I think it's going to be you stepping into your witch role, your high priestess role.
That's my card, isn't it?
Yep, that's your I wrote that down. That's your life card. Is the high priestess.
That's my soul card.
It's your soul card.
Oh my god.
Because your life your life path number is 2, and that number 2 in the tarot is the high priestess. So I think quite literally, you know, something's coming through. Maybe this is really personal, you don't have to answer this, but did, you know, when the coping mechanism of food started when you were little, correct?
Oh, yeah.
Do you think that coincided with you kind of being an intuitive kid and you didn't know it?
You know, that's not something I've thought of. Probably.
Yeah.
I had a very tumultuous childhood.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of us have. I think intensity would get so big in my household that was probably how I escaped, or how at least how I medicated myself. But it was also like, I mean, there was several years of my childhood where, like, it wasn't just being home, it was also like school. Like,
oh yeah.
The stress was nonstop. It was nonstop. And I think there's no one to tell me that this was all going to end at some point. That this was all going to be over. I would never have to deal with these kind of situations again.
Yeah.
As a kid, even when you're, who knows, even as a kid, when you're told that, does that process?
You know, no.
It doesn't really. So I think for me, it was seeing how many people in my life, particularly my family members, even extended family members, turning to food all the time for joyful events, for good things. And of course, it was always bad food. It wasn't like everything was fried, and or just a lot of bad carbs. And you know, I think that's kind of how I started looking at food. It's something that would make me happy, even though it was bad for me.
Yeah. There's something intuitively, maybe it's like a little bit of the medical intuitive inside of me, but there's something about you as a kid and what I'm feeling, and it's that sort of empathic kid who has no idea that they're an empath, has no idea that they're a sponge, has no idea that they're hypersensitive to their environment.
Oh, yeah.
And just reaching for the thing that that is accessible to them,
mm-hmm.
and that can provide them with that quick comfort. And there's something about you now as an adult embracing that sort of highly sensitive, intuitive part of yourself that I think will lessen that sort of little kid that wants to medicate with that. There's like something to that. It's like connected.
Yeah, it was a realization, especially this year, that like this, no matter what, this doesn't help me.
Yeah.
It doesn't help me.
Yeah.
And it's time to find another way to healthfully cope with stresses and turmoil and grief. And it's also a lot of like, I did a lot of grief meditation the last several years and have been able to let go of things. But there are still some little things that don't want to be let go of yet. So
yeah,
we might have to do some vow breakers eventually, but.
Do you see what I have there?
Yep.
Confront.
Resolve grief.
Yeah, I put that little note in his or their 12th house, for the Saturn and in Venus, confronting unresolved grief. That's, I think, part of your soul contract as well, would be learning how to confront grief. And I think there's a part of you too, I don't know, it's kind of that, it's not that you're going to be a death doula, but there's a part of you that is, because you have confronted grief though, in a lot of ways, especially this year.
Mm-hmm.
I know you released your parents' ashes into nature.
Yep.
And I actually think in doing that, you sort of shook the hands of death in a way.
Oh yeah, and I've had communication with Asriel before.
Yeah.
For sure.
Tell me more about Asriel, angel. You're talking about Archangel Asriel, mm-hmm. and
yeah, outside, not in the Archangel tradition whatsoever.
Oh, okay.
But, I guess we'd say Kabbalistic version of who Asriel would be. So Asriel. Yes, I will not be a death doula because it's not my nature, but I feel like Asriel has definitely communicated with me on several occasions because of my needing to cope with the idea of death. And am I at the finish line with that? No, I don't know if I'll ever be. But again, even creatively, I wrote an opera that we premiered on Halloween.
Yeah.
That you went to.
I did go to.
That I think was really important for me to write because it examined some of those aspects of death that I think I was really afraid of confronting. I think I've had am I getting away from your question?
No, because okay. I wanted to ask more about like the medicine that you can offer from the journey of your natal chart in sort of fearing that grieving process. Is there anything that you've learned from confronting it that can help someone who's listening, who doesn't necessarily, who's maybe procrastinating or avoiding grieving a death? Or
you know, that's so tricky. And,
yeah.
You know, and I don't want to say anything that someone listening will think, well, why am I not there yet? Because we all handle grief differently. And my journey is my journey. And the way that I confronted it is not necessarily going to be the right way for someone else to confront it.
Yeah.
And, putting that out there. I feel like for me, being able to confront it has led to good things. I still deal with medical anxiety. I don't know if I'll ever get over that. I would love to, but it might be something that I don't know if I will. And the way that I dealt with my parents' loss, particularly my mother's, was to just finally say after all this time, like, I have to let this go because it's no good to keep hanging on to why am I grieving or why. It is no good to dwell on your sadness of someone's passing when they're off in a better place and don't want you to be so sad in the first place.
Mm.
And my mother just blatantly told me that I was wasting my life grieving her when she was already part of what is just complete unmitigated joy.
Yeah.
And that opened up a lot of perspective for me when it came to death. My fear of death, my personal fear of death, is for the fact that I think and feel like I have so much more to accomplish. And
Saturn square Jupiter.
Yep.
Yep.
And I'm not ready yet. But I also try to take solace in the fact that we write our own journey. We write our own medical journey, which you and I have talked about before, too.
We have talked about that, yeah.
That I decide when it's time to go, and I still have to have conversations with my higher self to say, you're not going anywhere. You're not going anywhere, buddy.
Right.
You're good. Like, you're right. You have plenty of time on here still. And, you know, time to make some changes and move forward for the better. I would say the best medicine for dealing with grief is to let go and realize that it is okay to feel sad about someone's passing. It is not okay, though, to torture yourself or punish yourself for the fact that that person's no longer here when you have so much more to do. You have a purpose, and you deny your purpose when you envelop yourself in your grief. And so, yes, acknowledge it, but also be okay with letting it go. And don't feel guilty about letting it go, because, again, that accomplishes nothing in insisting on hanging on to that.
Yeah, that's so powerful. And I think you had to come to that realization, and you had to have that experience of letting your parents go, because you're now stepping into your role as a reader,
mm-hmm.
and I'm sure you've already experienced this. You're going to be a grief counselor of sorts in some readings.
Oh, very, very much so.
And you can't necessarily, it's not to say, you know, you have to be fully healed to be a healer, but it's more about, we have to go through these processes in order to help someone else. And I think that's that role of quote unquote grief counselor or death doula. It's not how everybody always thinks of an intuitive person, but that really is part, I think, of our archetype that we have to step into as the healer, in a way.
I think it's being able to say to that person, I remember I had one in particular where she had a lot of trauma, a lot of abuse of various types in her her childhood and the teenager hood for lack of better, her teen years, and she came for a healing, and you know, the only thing that you can do is say, I hear you, and what you feel is valid, and you have every right to feel like you did not deserve this because you didn't deserve it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it's happened, so you can't do anything about that, except know that you did nothing to bring that to yourself. That's what someone else did. That was someone else's accountability, not your own.
Yeah.
And again, it's time to say, why do you feel shame over this when you've done, you had no accountability or responsibility in what happened to you? And to be able to give yourself permission, and I think that is the most important thing, is you have to say to yourself, you have permission to feel love. You have permission to let go of pain and guilt and shame and hurt. You have permission to let it go.
Mm.
You do not need to hold on to this and move on and embrace joy and embrace happiness and embrace contentment, because that is what you deserve as
yeah.
a human being. You don't do anything in your life or past lives to have that kind of stuff happen to you.
Yeah.
Those things, unfortunately, just happen. And it's time, and yeah, it sucks. It sucks to have those things happen. It really is. But for your own healing's sake, you need to get to a point to say to yourself, why do I keep holding on to this now? How is this serving me? Is this serving me? No, time to let it go.
Right.
I always say throw in the ash, like throw in the fire, turn it to ashes. You gotta let it burn. You gotta burn the whole thing down and learn to rebuild. And sometimes it's a longer journey than what we want, but I think the self-realization of knowing that it's time to let that go and be able to do that and recreate and turn something good out of that is really key to finding true healing in those in that kind of trauma.
What's the color that you think of when we're talking about releasing grief and transforming grief?
For me, it's cerulean.
Cerulean.
And I'll tell you what, my initial color that I would get from grief before my mother passed was like sepia.
Mm.
And after she passed and going through the transformation I went through and the journey I went through with trying to deal with the grief of her passing, it automatically was like all of a sudden it turned to cerulean. It's a very distinct blue. It tends to shine for me too. That kind of blue tends to shine for me. Because I feel like it went to that color because there's also a sense of hope and a dark beauty. And for me, also going into grief was me turning to the dark goddesses for guidance and for more intuitive help and like where to turn me to. And so I think they spoke, and I listened, and I think I absorbed that. I think that's why now I get that color when we talk about that.
Cerulean, yeah. And there's I want to kind of wrap up our session, but there, speaking of the dark goddesses, you do have an aspect, you have Lilith, and you have Vesta sitting right next to each other, conjunct in the chart. And they're both forming a T-square with that Mercury and that Neptune. Now, I really have no idea what Vesta conjunct Lilith could mean. I've never seen that in a chart. But while I was trying to kind of intuit what it could mean, I was thinking of Vesta, who's our goddess that's about our devotion to God, and Lilith, who's really the dark goddess, who kind of encourages us to explore our shadow. And I can't help but think those two asteroids together in your chart really mean that you are here to not only do shadow work for yourself, but to be a shadow worker for others. And
oh, yeah.
We can't be shadow workers without that experience of grief and passing, mm-hmm. and all those cerulean things.
Yes.
Yeah.
I got that from, like, going back to our topic with Asriel. It's kind of something that I do now where I feel like I can tell when someone's going to be a death doula.
Yeah.
Because especially during Reiki, I get very distinct blue fire over someone's third eye. It's cold, and cold for me normally translates to a blockage in that chakra. But for me, when I do that to someone, I get this like cold fire. I hear Asriel tell me, like, send them to me.
Yeah.
And that doesn't necessarily mean that Asriel's saying send them to work for me, but that's sending them to the knowledge of who Asriel is and what death is and how the process of death works for the other side as well as us.
Yeah.
What our perspectives are and how we can kind of bring those together. So yeah, I had one just a couple weeks ago where she was like, oh my God, I actually been thinking about that a lot. And I was like, yeah, I totally got that from your third eye. And I was like, I got a lot of literature if you want to look into it. So we'll see if she does or not, you know.
I identify in kind of the same way as you, in the sense that I don't think I will ever call myself like a death doula, mm-hmm. but I think stepping in a little bit more into that medical intuitive that I'm pretty scared to step into, because that's like a big responsibility and I don't think I'm ready to call myself a medical intuitive yet. But even being able to have the opportunity to read for you, I think Spirit has put me in the position of medical intuitive, in the sense of like delivering that message to you when I told you, I think it was like one of the first times I read for you, I was like, you decide when you're gonna die.
Yeah.
And that's really like I almost feel like if you're a medical intuitive, you have that tattooed on your forehead. You decide when you're gonna die, and stop saying stuff like, heart attacks run in my family, breast cancer runs in my family,
right.
Mental illness runs in my family. Stop saying that shit, because guess what? You can rewrite that with the words that you choose. And
yep.
I think that's the journey that you're on right now. So,
yeah. And for the listening audience, so that they can understand that this isn't just them, but I as well. Like, I'm aware of that, but there's also a part of my brain, part of my ego, that is not ready to 100% let go of that yet.
We want to hold on.
We want to hold on to those things, as untruthful as they can be, because it's so programmed in us. But I struggle with it too. But I do have an awareness that that's what it is, and I have to tell myself, tell myself that fact every so often.
Ah, well, I love this. I love what we talked about. This is awesome.
Yeah, this is great.
Rosha, before we go, do you think? I guess to kind of end, I had this idea just while I was just sitting here 1 second ago. If you're comfortable, would you maybe intuit a message for anybody who's listening? But can you intuit it through color? Can you give us like a color, like in a message through a color that you may be seeing?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm getting definitely a burgundy right now.
Ooh.
And burgundy right now also is loneliness, and there are definitely a few listeners out there that are dealing with a very struggling feeling of being alone because of the holidays, I think. But I mean, it's been before the holidays, but I think the holidays just amplify things. just know that this is a shadow side that's working against you right now, and that you need to work forward and look forward to what the big picture is, and write down what you want in this life and manifest that. Because when you start focusing on the one single thing that you're looking for, you're going to be able to accomplish that when you keep that in your awareness. And that this loneliness is only a trigger to tell you to start looking for that one thing that you want to manifest so deeply.
Mm.
Remember that it's not a symptom of something that's happening to you right now. Remember that it is Spirit's way of telling you you're feeling this way, so what are you going to do to respond to it?
Yes.
And you need to make that right choice. You need to make that choice for yourself and your higher good, and also for your higher self, and have those conversations with your higher self.
Yeah. Oh, I felt like that was for me. And for other people.
It happens.
Oh my gosh. Well, thank you so much, Rocha. I'm going to put all of Rocha's information in the show notes. And you can follow them on Instagram. So I'll have their what is that called? Instagram handle in the show notes. And all of their other information. We're both working at Snowflake Healing in the Chicagoland area. So if you do live in the Chicagoland area and you resonated with Rocha's message, they pop in here maybe a couple times a month to do some readings. So if you're interested in reading with them, all of that stuff, anything that you need to know will be in the show notes. And thank you guys so much for listening.